इदानीं धर्मपादस्ते सत्यं निर्वर्तये यथा तं जिगृक्षत्य धर्मोऽयम् अनृतेनाधिता खली. Standing on one leg only, which is your truthfulness, and you are somehow or other hobbling along, but quarrel personified Kali, flourishing by deceit, is also trying to destroy that leg. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The principles of religion do not stand on some dogmas or man-made formulas, but they stand on four primary regulative observances, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. The mass of people must be taught to practice these principles from childhood. Austerity means to accept voluntarily things which may not be very comfortable for the body, but are conducive for spiritual realization. For example, fasting. Fasting twice or four times a month is a sort of austerity which may be voluntarily accepted for spiritual realization only and not for any other purposes, political or otherwise. Fastings which are meant not for self-realization but for some other purposes are condemned in the Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, cleanliness is necessary for both the mind and the body. Simply bodily cleanliness may help to some extent, but cleanliness of the mind is necessary, and it is effected by glorifying the Supreme Lord. No one can cleanse the accumulated mental dust without glorifying the Supreme Lord. A godless civilization cannot cleanse the mind because it has no idea of God. And for this simple reason, people under such a civilization cannot have good qualifications, however they may be materially equipped. We have to see things by their resultant action. The resultant action of human civilization in the age of Kali is dissatisfaction. So everyone is anxious to get peace of mind. This peace of mind was complete in the Satya age because of the existence of the above-mentioned attributes of the human beings. Gradually, these attributes have diminished in the Treta Yuga to three-fourths, in the Dwapar Yuga to half, and in the age of Kali to one-fourth, which is also gradually diminishing on account of prevailing untruthfulness. By pride, either artificial or real, the resultant action of austerity is spoiled. By too much affection for female association, cleanliness is spoiled. By too much addiction to intoxication, mercy is spoiled. And by too much lying propaganda, truthfulness is spoiled. The revival of Bhagavad Dharma can save human civilization from falling prey to evils of all description. the basic principles which support real religion are herein described: austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. One who follows these four basic principles in one's life is able to surrender to the Supreme Personality of God. Krishna explains in Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Ishami Masucha. That we should abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender to Him, with faith that He will protect us from all sinful reactions, and we should be free from fear. A devotee who has faith does not fear, does not worry, because he knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the controller of all controllers and the cause of all causes. And He always protects His devotee. If we surrender to Him, what do we have to fear? Krishna promises, my devotee will never be vanquished. Devotee means one who surrenders to Him. So many anxieties are brought about, especially in this age of Kali Yuga. The atmosphere is surcharged with so much agitation, so much deceit, so much sinful karma permeating, that everyone is disturbed, everyone is afraid. People are envious, people are greedy, people are insecure. And therefore there is no peace. But how to achieve real peace? Everyone is speaking. The politicians, the philanthropists, the sociologists, the educationists, everyone is speaking of peace, but they do not know what is real peace. There is no peace in material consciousness. Jiva jiva sajivanam, because this is a world where one living being is food for another living being, where the strong is always exploiting the weak, whether animal civilization or human civilization. So how can we find peace in this world? People think that they will be peaceful when they can conquer others, because then they isolate their situation where very few could challenge them. But the opposite effect takes place. The bigger you are, the greater you are, the more people want to tear you down from your position. On every level, in politics, if you've never succeeded very much in politics, it's not so much of an agitation when you lose an election. But when you are the president or prime minister or king, so many people are trying to tear you down more than ever before. You were thinking, if I had that position, I would be free from fear. But the higher you go, the more people want your position, want your money, want your prestige. So we have seen Srila Prabhupada often described one great president of the United States. He ran so many elections and lost, but he was a very, very powerful politician. And ultimately, he became the President of the United States. And he made some mistake. And all those who were envious against him, they capitalized on that mistake. They totally destroyed his good name, and they tore him down from his position in great embarrassment and humiliation. The man practically went into hibernation due to total misery. So the bigger you are, the greater you are, the more people are going to try to destroy you, and the more it's painful, the more your heart is filled with anxiety and distress when you lose what you have, and you will lose it. Similarly, people in this world today are just crazy for athletics and sporting events. We have seen in the West, and now we're even seeing in this great land of Bharatvarsha, people are stuck to their TVs in the stadiums, watching people just beating balls with sticks. In the West, they beat each other. Anyways, it's all in the name of competition. And we identify ourselves with whoever is particularly competing. It says in the Bhagavatam that one who identifies with his place of birth is considered to be a dog or ass or cow, animal consciousness. It's eva gokaram. In the Western world, the athletics, not only are they identifying with their nation, they're identifying with their state and their city. Every city has their sporting team and they're all fighting. And people, they're just so proud and so anxious that their team wins. And the team is very proud. A team that hardly ever wins, nobody's in much anxiety about it. We have seen. But when a team is the champion, and they're in the final playoffs, then they lose. They're miserable. They might as well die. They're so miserable. And the whole city, the whole state, the whole country is totally in anxiety, vanquished. Even some of our devotees, previously, they could not sleep for 5 nights. I have been told. If you look around, you'll see who I mean. So, if you never made it to the playoffs, you wouldn't care win-lose. So in this way, the bigger you are, the more you suffer in this material world. And everyone wants to be big, thinking, then I will be peaceful. Maya Sukaya. In this way, Maya, in her deceitful way, cheats us. Our process of trying to achieve peace is actually what is irritating and aggravating our anxieties and our miseries. And that is a fact. Wealthy people, they want more and more wealth, thinking, now I'm a small businessman, and there's so many other small businessmen, but if I become big, I could conquer all these small businessmen. But then you become big. It's like in the ocean, the shark is thinking is bigger than all the little fish, and the whale is bigger than all the sharks. But then amongst whales, they're always fighting with each other. And of all fish, human beings are most anxious to catch the whales. Because you could get a lot of money if you catch whale. In the fact, today, the biggest, the most powerful, the most fearless of all fish, the whale, is an endangered species. Does that make sense? You would think that no other fish could eat the whales. So why, of all the fish, the whale is an endangered species? Because he's so big and he's so great, the humans, they all want the whales. So in the same way, the bigger we are in this material world, the more Maya wants to get us, and the more she'll send agents to get us. The more wealthy, the more powerful, the more famous, the more highly educated. Jiva, jiva, sajivanam. So how to find peace in this world of eating, of people just eating each other and killing each other and destroying each other, exploiting each other? There is only one process, and that is to surrender to Krishna. There is no other way. So why not surrender to Krishna? Why waste our time just agitating our miserable condition? Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva lokamaheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shantim rajjati. Krishna is the reservoir of all opulences. Admit it, accept it, and glorify him. He is the supreme beautiful. Stop trying to be beautiful. He is the supreme wealthy. He is the supreme strong. He is the supreme knowledgeable, the supreme famous, and supremely renounced. We're all competing with each other, trying to develop, create, and exploit more and more of these opulences. And the more we have, the more miserable we become, the more fearful and anxiety-ridden become. The more we become a target to be challenged by Maya and her forces. Maya is like a robber, a thief. Thieves are not very much concerned with robbing some poor beggar on the street. But the wealthier you are, the more opulence you have, the more the thieves are plotting and planning to take everything away and kill you, murder you, if that is what is required. So in the same way, we should understand that no peace will be derived through the material process. But if we surrender to Krishna, by accepting that he is the supreme proprietor of everything, he is the enjoyer of all that exists, he is our best friend. He always protects his devotees. And how he protects his devotees, this is the main subject in the Bhakti Shastras. Srimad Bhagavatam is the story of how Krishna protects his devotees. It is the spotless Purana, because these scriptures are trying to teach us how to have faith in Krishna's protection. How Krishna protected the Pandavas in so many ways, even against all odds, even in the most difficult, tormenting conditions of this material existence. How Krishna protected Ambarish Maharaj. He was just helplessly standing with folded palms as the fiery demon created by Durvas was about to devour him. A demon that could devour the entire planet within seconds was aiming all of his wrath upon this one man. Fiery demon. He didn't run for fire extinguisher. He didn't call the fire department. He didn't put on an asbestos suit. He just stood with folded palms and prayed, Krishna, I'm yours. And Krishna protected him, inconceivably. How Prahlad Maharaj, in the most difficult circumstances, he was not in any anxiety. He was completely peaceful because he had faith that Krishna would protect him. Material world is a place of anxiety. It is a place of death. It is a place of reversals. It is not that because you become a devotee that material nature stops performing its function. It will always perform its function.
You will grow old, you will get diseased, and you will die. Whether you're a devotee or not, whether you're a devotee or not, some people will love you and some people will hate you. Some people want to help you and some people want to destroy you. This is the nature of the world. And you're in this world. You have chose to come here. But if you take shelter of Krishna, how does Krishna protect you? By remaining always within your heart. Like a lotus flower, even in the dirtiest place, it remains very nice, very pure, very clean, because of its connection to the soil below. Similarly, if our consciousness is always connected to Krishna and nourished by Krishna, then we can find shelter and peace in every situation in life. Because for the body is a violent place. There's always violence going on in the body. Various cells are fighting and various amoebas are fighting and everything. There's just wars going on in our body. You don't even know on the atomic level, on the bacterial level. And time is constantly conquering every part of the body. But when we realize, when we understand that we are the eternal soul, then there is peace. Peace can only be on the spiritual platform. There is no peace on the material platform. At the most, in the material platform, what people call peace is a temporary illusion of ceasefire. For the time being, it doesn't appear that we're being attacked. So we think that's peace. But actually, when we're not being attacked, we should know the enemy forces are just mobilizing and surrounding us in bigger and better ways, ready for a greater attack. Can you be in peace in a situation like that? Unless we transcend the bodily concept of life, unless we give up the propensity for sense enjoyment, which permeates perpetuates the bodily concept of life, there is no real peace. And the only way to do that, Vishayavanivaratante Niraharasya Dehina Rasavarajam Rasokyasya Param Drisvanivaratante. We must experience the higher taste. We must be resolute in our determination and experience the higher taste of Krishna consciousness. Now, to surrender to Krishna, it is explained in this verse, we must adopt the principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Because without practicing these principles as a prerequisite, surrender is impossible. Yoga means to ultimately culminate in surrender to Krishna. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavamam papadyate vasudeva saravamiti samahatma sadurlava. And Srila Prabhupada, he explained there is no question of yoga, there is no question of religion without these four principles, without sense control. So therefore, in this Krishna consciousness movement, the real and true process of surrendering is being given to us. Austerity. It is described herein that false pride destroys the principle of austerity. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught, Trinadapi sunichena taroravi sahishtana amanina manadena kirataniya sadahari. We must make our goal in life to be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, ready to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. This is the real meaning of austerity. Austerity doesn't simply mean giving up eating or giving up sleeping, or giving up wearing clothes, or giving up having sex. You can do all those things and still remain bound to material energy. The greatest austerity is giving up our false pride. And when we become humble, then we actually become protected and empowered by Krishna. Then all of these other things come naturally. Raghunath Das Goswami, no one deprived his body of sense gratification more than him. What was his condition? Taking a few drops of buttermilk a day and sometimes forgetting that, hardly sleeping 2 hours, just picking up garbage, cloth, copan, and putting it on, even in the cold, serious cold of the winter of northern India. How did he survive? If we try to do it, we will die. But he wasn't trying to be austere. He wasn't trying to become famous as a great tapasi. In fact, nobody even knew what he was doing. Krishnadas Kaviraj happened to be his next door neighbor at Radha Kund, so he could see, but it wasn't being advertised. But because he was so humble, because he was completely void of all pride, he was naturally austere. So false pride destroys austerity. Therefore, the basic principle of Krishna consciousness is humility. Then we can actually practice the real principle of austerity. Austerity means to accept what is favorable for Krishna consciousness and to reject what is not. That is real austerity. Srila Prabhupada was not concerned with people performing grand types of tapasya. He was concerned with people who were very humbly trying to follow the simple, basic process of Krishna consciousness in the mood of being the servant of the servant of the Lord and his devotees. Cleanliness. Srila Prabhupada explains there are two types of cleanliness, internal and external, and they are both essential. Cleanliness is next to godliness, externally. Internally, cleanliness is the very source of godliness. So Prabhupada was very, very much concerned that everything was kept clean, because this is a preaching movement. Unless people see how we're clean, they will not take seriously how we are trying to be clean within. Srila Prabhupada, in the West, he told everyone, you have to bathe first thing in the morning. People in the West don't bathe first thing in the morning. Some people do, but it's quite rare. Countries like France, when they heard this, what is this? They invented perfume. You know, French perfume is the best perfume in the world as far as popularity amongst sense gratifiers. In every shop in the United States, in Americas, in Europe, they have French cologne and French perfume. And it's just supposed to intoxicate you and make you smell so nice that everyone wants to be near you. And what else they do is another thing. But where is that invented by? Because traditionally the French people hate to take baths. They hate it. It's just such a terrible austerity for them. So therefore they created perfume so that they could smell so obnoxious. And then they just cover it with all these fragrant oils so people don't know that they're abominable. If they don't put on their perfume for one day, no one could stand near them. Sometimes they don't bathe for months or years at a time. But every day they just cover themselves with cologne and perfume, and everyone, very, very nice. You are so fragrant you are today. And the whole world is paying good money to try to get these perfumes. So they're simply filthy, simply dirty. And what is your surroundings? We know what we associate with influences our consciousness. If our body is dirty, our consciousness is going to feel dirty by that connection. If the temple is dirty, if our living conditions, the ashrams or our homes, are dirty, it's going to create a dirty, disorganized state of consciousness. That is a fact. So Srila Prabhupada said that our temples, our homes, the devotees in their surroundings, he said we should become famous throughout the world as being revolutionarily clean. Revolutionarily clean. That means amazingly cleaner than anyone or everyone else. And we have seen temples that are so nice, simple, not that much, but so clean. And people just come in and they say, you people must be so spiritual. You're so conscientious to keep every little detail clean. People have joined our movement just by seeing cleanliness. And people have left our movement because of seeing sloppiness and messiness. It's not a question of having money or having an opulent situation. But whatever we have should be revolutionarily kept clean. Every inch should be meticulously looked after. The hallways of our temple, the stairs, the temple room itself, the living quarters, the places of storage. We should not tolerate an unnecessary grain of dust. We should notice it, see it, and remove it immediately. Because this is Krishna consciousness. If we actually appreciate the fact that it belongs to Krishna, how could we let it be dirty? If we understand this body is Krishna's temple, it is Krishna's property, how could we not bathe it? If we understand that our ashram is Krishna's abode, the temple is Krishna's abode, the hallways, everything is Krishna's, how could we possibly let it be a mess? That means we are not Krishna conscious, we are Krishna unconscious. So cleanliness is a very, very, very vital principle. And here at Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple, this should be a great emphasis. Not just one person, but every single devotee. They should never walk by something laying that's not supposed to be and think someone else will take care of it. Everything should be spotlessly, revolutionarily clean, 24 hours a day, and how to clean the body and how to clean our facilities. Srila Prabhupada says, with water. We clean with water. Washing. And internal cleanliness comes through glorifying Krishna. Through the process of hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Because the mind is a very, very dirty place. One of the qualities of a dirty place externally is when a room is just cluttered with so much junk that you don't even need. And it's just creating such a mess. You don't even know what is there and what is not there. And in that mess, so many roaches and so many rats and everything is just surviving. So our mind is like that. If we keep our room like that, our mind will be more like that, because we're influenced by our surroundings. So we could keep our living conditions very, very organized, neat and clean. But for so many births, we have been accumulating so many junk in the storage room of our mind. So many old molding blankets of material desires. So many useless things. How to clean the mind of all of the rubbish of material desires that have been accumulated and gathered birth after birth after birth after birth. The process is hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. By regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and other such bhakti shastras, and by very, very attentively every single day, according to our Guru Maharaj's instruction, chanting Krishna's name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. But just as cleanliness of the body, it's not that you take a bath and then you're clean forever. You must do it every single day. According to Brahminical standards, three times a day. Morning, noon, and evening. That is the standard of cleanliness. And as far as the facilities, emptying the garbage, cleaning the floors, cleaning the walls, getting rid of unnecessary garbage and accumulations, it must be done every day, several times a day. This is how we keep the facilities clean externally. And the mind, every day, several times a day, we must chant our Gayatri Mantra three times a day for cleanliness. We must chant 16 rounds minimum every day for cleanliness. We must hear Srimad Bhagavatam class Gita every day for cleanliness. This will make our mind clean. And mercy. Of course, here, Srila Prabhupada explains, too much affection for female association, cleanliness is spoiled. What does that mean? We're talking about the internal cleanliness of the mind. Because too much infatuation and attachment to the opposite sex awakens lusty desires. And lusty desires is dirt. It is filth. It makes our mind a filthy place. The whole Varnashram system is scientific, systematic organization of society to give up lusty desires. First 25 years, brahmachari. Very severe restriction from the opposite sex. Why? To keep our mind clean, to keep it focused on God, to keep lusty desires and lusty impressions away. And Grihastha ashram is very much different than Grihamedi ashram. Grihastha ashram means living with wife or husband, procreating, having children, but doing it according to spiritual principles. Sex is for the service of God, for procreation. And Grihastha should strive for that standard. And the husband and the wife, they see each other as God brothers and God sisters first, and husband and wife second. They see each other as Vaishnavas, and they must honor each other. This is very essential. Because if you exploit a Vaishnava, that is an aparad. So we must honor and respect one another. Not see each other as objects of sense gratification, but seeing each other as devotees, as representatives of Guru and Krishna. And through that process, in the Grihastha ashram, the infatuation of sex desire is minimized and hopefully eliminated. There is restriction. And in the Vanaprastha ashram, although after the children are raised and we retire from our occupational duties, we may be with our husband or wife, but our only purpose together is bhajan and sadhana and guru seva, and showing compassion to the fallen souls. And of course, sannyas means no connection like this. So in this way, the Varnashram system is to keep the mind clean, and foremost, to not be infatuated by exposing oneself to circumstances that awaken lusty desires. Because that also, everything is ruined when we become infatuated by lusty desires. When we become too much attached to these sex desires, we become proud, so proud. We have seen when a man becomes attached to a woman, or when a woman becomes attached to a man in a improper way, they become so proud. They want to show that I am the best. They're always trying to be the hero to their partner. In the West, they want to show how I can physically beat up all other men. I'm so strong. I'm so athletic. I'm so learned. It's usually to impress your husband or impress your wife you do all these things. Yes? A person who's not attached to these things, it's not so difficult to overcome. So sex desire creates so much pride and greed. Just like we read about Ajamil, when he became infatuated by this type of consciousness, he became so greedy. He had to keep showing off to his consort. He had to constantly be reaffirming his greatness by providing so many things. And then you become envious, because here is my object of sense enjoyment. It must be everybody else's object too. Everyone wants what I have. So all bad qualities come when lust awakens in the heart. And then our mind becomes like that storage bin that just becomes accumulated with more and more and more and more anarthas, or unwanted, unnecessary trash of material impressions and desires. So we must learn how to create this inner cleanliness. And mercy. Mercy is the willingness to extend oneself for the benefit of another. To have sympathy and compassion for those who are in distress, for those who are in need. That is mercy. And it is described here that intoxication destroys the sense of mercy. Why? Can anyone say? How does intoxication destroy the principle of mercy? Because When you become intoxicated, your mind becomes completely self-centered. When you take drugs or you take alcohol or any of these other things, you just become completely immersed and infatuated by yourself. And the demands and the anxieties or the pleasures that it is deriving. We can give some examples. Cigarettes. When you become addicted to cigarettes, you can't stop smoking cigarettes. Your whole mind, your whole consciousness is just thinking, I have to have a cigarette. Why? Why do you have to have a cigarette? Because that cigarette is just satisfying a burning desire in me. You become completely engrossed in yourself, in trying to satisfy yourself, in trying to be compassionate, to giving pleasure to yourself and relief to yourself, and to that extent you cannot extend yourself to even consider or see the distress of others. Mercy means to be some selfless, and intoxication makes you totally selfish. When you drink alcohol, you can't even see the world properly anymore. You just completely go into your own mental conception of the world. Sometimes there's some relief when you're a drunkard for some temporary time, because you forget about the world and you forget about the sufferings and miseries of others. And you just, somehow or other, become so engrossed in your own mind and in your own body. Drugs like LSD, when people, young people would take, old people, whoever, you're just looking, all these hallucinations and all these colors and all these ecstasies of material nature, and you just become completely immersed and engrossed in your own selfish condition of life. And we find drug addicts, alcoholics, chain smokers, all these kinds of people who take too much intoxication, their consciousness is so terribly, terribly immersed in just somehow or other relieving themselves of anxiety. Therefore, it destroys their conception of mercy. They can no longer reach out and really feel true sympathy for others or help. Makes your heart hard. So mercy means to be charitable. And of course, the highest and purest spiritual form of mercy is to be charitable toward the soul, the Atma of others. Not just the body, not just the mind, but ultimately the soul. The greatest mercy is helping a person understand the goal of life, helping convince a person to live a pure life and to chant the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. And truthfulness, it is explained here that too much lying propaganda spoil truthfulness. Rupa Goswami explains we must be straightforward in our dealings. We should be simple. This is actually a definition of simplicity. Srila Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness means simple living and high thinking. What does it mean to be simple? It means without duplicity. That's all. Without duplicity. If we're humble, without we can be simple. We can just say what is the truth. Because we have no ulterior motives. We can be honest. We don't have to lie or cheat or bribe or steal to try to get something done for our own personal self-interest. Because we're detached. Renunciation, real renunciation, means you'll be completely truthful. Because you have nothing to lose. If I have some defect, I'm not trying to present myself as something great, so I'll say, yes, I'm a fallen soul. Yes, I have these problems. Why not? We're not trying to put on some image for the world to touch our feet. We just be honest, we be truthful. And when devotees are truthful with each other, then they trust each other. And where there's trust, gradually love awakens between them. You cannot love someone very well unless you trust them. And Srila Prabhupada explained, this movement is based on the principles of love and trust. So it is very important. Devotees have to be completely honest with one another on every level. Socially, physically, spiritually. The ultimate truthfulness is to only repeat the words of God. Do not speculate. Do not concoct. That is truthfulness. Srila Prabhupada, we gave our lives to him because he was truthful. He didn't give his opinions. He simply repeated the word of God, which is the absolute truth. When we live by the absolute truth's words and we repeat the absolute truth's words, then we are truthful. But also on another level, we have to be truthful in our ordinary dealings with each other. That is also very, very important. We can speak perfect philosophy, but if we're not truthful in our ordinary daily dealings with each other, people will not be impressed by all our big, big philosophical words of quoting shastras. So we have to repeat the truth, live by the truth, and be honest and simple in our daily relationships. That is truthfulness. We read Srimad Bhagavatam, and we become immersed in the truth. Others, they watch the television, which is practically all nothing but lying propaganda. Others read the newspapers and the magazines, which is so much lying propaganda. So much ill motivation going into those things. You associate with that, you lose the quality of truthfulness. In the age of Kali Yuga, truthfulness is the last leg that's standing. Harivo. And Maya is like that Kali with the stick trying to break that last leg. Already broken the other leg, now this one last leg remains. So we see how Maya, how the persona, the deceitful personality of Kali is trying to destroy that last leg of truthfulness. How? He's getting everybody addicted to the television, everyone addicted to the newspapers, everyone addicted to so many novels, addicted to so many magazines, this whole mass media. It's so much lying propaganda. We're just being influenced and associating with all this lying. It destroys that last leg. Kali is expert. Just see how expert. The one leg that's left and the whole world is addicted to the thing that destroys the leg of truthfulness. It's normal. If you don't daily read all newspapers, magazines, televisions, radios, and all these other things, people think you're antisocial. They think there's something wrong with you, you're crazy. This is to the degree Maya has become, Kali has become the emperor of this age. completely ruling over, if you don't surrender to Kali, you're considered an outcast. Impractical, useless, foolish, uninformed and uneducated, because you read Srimad Bhagavatam, because you come to Srimad Bhagavatam class, because you attend nice kirtans. And also it is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Maya is also trying to destroy the leg of truthfulness by so much false pride and everything else that we just are not willing to admit who we are, what we're, where we're at. We're all trying to be something else, trying to present ourselves as someone else. And therefore, quarrel and hypocrisy. Nobody trusts each other anymore. Even family members, it is very rare that they trust each other. Children don't trust their parents. America is the land that the whole world is chasing to become like. That was the motto of the young generation in the 50s and 60s. It was like the war cry. Anyone over 30, you can never trust. Anyone over 30 told you anything, you just know that you can't trust it. It's wrong. They have some motive. And when you're like that, the parents don't trust the children. What did you do today? I studied. Yes, of course. Parents don't. What kind of things? Nobody trusts. People don't trust the political leaders anymore. They don't trust their friends anymore. They don't trust their family men anymore. And this is the last leg of religion. And as Srila Prabhupada explains, it is wobbling. It is practically finished. And only 5,000 of over 432,000 years of Kali have passed. And just see how this last leg is wobbling and how Maya is doing such a thorough job, Kali. So these four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness must be followed. And our whole process of Krishna consciousness is these four legs, as we have explained. And by following these principles, we surrender to Krishna. By following them under the guidance of an authorized spiritual master in disciplic succession, we learn the process of surrendering to Krishna. And in that surrender, there is real shelter. There is real peace. There is real happiness. There is real meaning and purpose to our life, and there is no other way. We should give up all false hopes in any other process of peace outside of surrendering to Krishna through the process that Sri Guru and Gauranga has given us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.